Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel and Shepherd and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Cole Hornaday.
Hey, what's going on?
And Nicole Lamb.
Hi there.
Oh. Hello.
Hello.
It's late, and we're all getting a little bit punchy, and I'm just like...
A little touchy over there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, well, I'm poking Nicole on the shoulder because she's looking a little dozy. And
scaring me.
Ice water. did I startle you?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, no, that was legit.
Uh-oh. Okay, did it wake you
that
up
That was
some?
Legit terror.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh. All righty. Well, other than our fatigue and general goofiness, how is everybody doing?
Doing all right.
I am fatigued and generally goofy.
You are fatigued?
Yeah. Actually.
I'm always tired. All right. Hey,
I'm hydrated.
This is episode 129.
Well,
we are hydrated. And it's a lovely warm night. One of these days, I said this last year, one of these days I just want to take the show out on the sidewalk and do it outside. But I think the people from the bar on one side of us and the pot shop on the other side of us.
We've had challenges creating our art on the sidewalk.
It's best to lock ourselves away.
We have to deal enough with the people that want to go to the pot shop while we're in the store. Because we had a gentleman come in being like, do you know where it is? I'm like, it's right next door. And I point in the direction. He's like, where? I'm like, right next to us. He's like, how far down across the street? I'm like, no, right next to us.
Oh, wow. Wow, that took some.
Yeah.
I get like Prices Right about it. I'm like, you're almost there.
No, I was really appreciating Chris's patience with this guy. And I'm like, you know, if somebody who cannot understand simple directions to find the pot store probably shouldn't, need to go to the pot store
re-evaluate
anymore.
Perhaps.
All right. Speaking of guilty pleasures like marijuana, let's talk about comics.
Oh, good segue.
Lovely. Yeah.
What? Let's just do a quick round table. What are our guilty pleasure comics? I'll start. Mine is, and I don't have a lot of comics in my collection, but I do have every volume of Rick and Morty because I adore the cartoon and it's coming back.
I don't think that's a guilty pleasure.
No.
Is it?
A lot of people love that.
I'm kind of.
And it's good.
A guilty pleasure casts shade
on
your taste.
But I feel weird because it's like I'm in a comic book store and I'm buying comics because I love the cartoon, not because I like the comic.
That just makes you a good person.
Yes. Thank you for the money.
I do appreciate buying comics here at the comic section. So Rick and Morty, and also it's fluff, right? It's not. I don't have to think too much about it. I can just I could just sit and read it before bedtime, and that's it. What's all your guilty comics?
Everybody's pointing to look at that.
Well, I had trouble figuring out my guilt because I'm so not guilty
shameless.
About things. Yeah. I'm shameless about what
I'll start if it helps give you a sense.
Sure.
So my guilty pleasure are the Dawn comics or anything by Joseph Michael Linsner.
Cry for
okay,
Dawn.
So
Cry
if we go
Dawn.
Into the TNA world, I got something.
No, I know you do. I love his art style. But the thing is, when I was reading him when I was like, I don't know, 13 to 16, I actually thought he was like, oh, wow, this is a really interesting take on religion and spirituality. It's very cliche. It's very painful.
It's just hollow as all get out.
Yeah, it's very painful.
It's just all about the boobs.
But he had some good sense of humor. No, I thought he had some good storytelling and some good humor, and he's got great emoting faces, but a lot of his people do look the same after a while. Mm-hmm. But I still, whenever I see him do a thing, I'm like, oh, I better get that. Why am I getting that? Because you're going to get it. Oh, okay. So that's, I think that's my biggest guilty pleasure.
Well, his stuff was really like emo, heavy metal-esque kind of stuff. Every other person in the world was getting Dawn tattooed on their buttock, you know? So, but I bought it too. There's no judgy here.
Okay,
there is no judgy here.
What about you, Cole? Do you have a guilty pleasure?
I have so many because to me, a guilty pleasure is I don't want to admit I read this.
Right.
As I've expressed in every episode for the last 12, I'm cleaning out comic books and I'm doing some purging.
And all of the guilt is coming to the surface.
I'm coming across
like
stuff. I'm like, oh my goodness, why, are Delilah?
Are you actually finding comics where you're like, I own this?
Absolutely. I've been buying comic books since I was 12. So there are a couple that immediately hopped to mind. One of them was a book called from a publisher called Big Bang called The Night Watchman. And this came out in 1993 and by Chris Ecker and Ben Torres. And it was just an unapologetic amateurish pastiche of Frank Miller's Dark Knight. The guy drew like Miller. He aped Miller and at Six Ways from Sunday, and it had no. It didn't even try to be anything else other than a pastiche of the Dark Knight. Worshipful pastiche of the Dark Knight. The bad guy was called the Pink Flamingo, and he was a mashup of the Penguin and the Joker. The sidekick was called Galahad. The series had a little bit of gumption, but it was just like. These guys created an altar to Frank Miller. They burned incense and then they did really naughty things. Ultimately, Big Bang was picked up by Image, which seemed very fitting because Image, and what I realized in writing this up is that there were a lot of books that the publishers of Image picked up because they were just bloody sycophantic. Mm. They were young artists who were aping the styles of McFarlane and Larson and all these people, and they weren't even apologetic about it. And the next one is even more so, is a comic book called Ant by Mario Gulli, which is about this buxom, nonverbal, vigilante female ant person who is actually this bullied little girl, and Ant is the alter ego. Gulli was like a big fan of Todd McFarlane, and his artwork just, again, unapologetic aping of the style, a tribute to Spawn, and the writing was really, really under par. I remember reading, and I went to trouble to track these things down because they're self-published. He was self-publishing his comic. His company was called Arcana, and in the second issue, he's like, I think he said in his letters page, I got a lot of complaints about my bad grammar and stuff, so now my sister is proofreading my scripts for me. And I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. This is really crap. But I kept buying them. And eventually, Ant got picked up by what? Image. And she has actually been guest starring now in the, she's part of the Image superhero universe. And Ant is now appearing in Savage Dragon. But again, I come across these and I'm like, why? And they have been purged.
Oh, you purged them.
Yep, I did. There's no point in keeping them. I enjoyed them for what they were at the time, and now I'm embarrassed and I have made my shame public.
Well, thank you, Cole.
So over on the shameless side of things, yeah. I still feel no shame for these things. Yeah, so my not so guilty pleasure was the Fearless Dawn series by Steve Manamanamanan. I always forget how to say his last name. Yeah, it's like Manamana. And it's like a super cheesecake version of Tank Girl, but like if she was more gothy, like wore like bat ears or something like that on like her head. No tank.
Atomic Wasteland?
No. Just forget the tank.
Oh, okay.
But she's similar stylings, kind of like that. But she's always fighting some like super sexy, like almost naked Nazi girl with like her Nazi clan and stuff. And sometimes dinosaurs show up. And like every pose, like every frame is like sexy. Everybody's always in a sexy pose. And I have to admit, I really haven't read the whole series. I just kind of looked through it because I think it's adorable. So maybe one day I'll actually read the whole entire series. You're thinking over there. Do you have something?
No. Just like you're shameless, and that's great. But what I'm thinking is, like, how about something that you know is not necessarily good in quality, but you still really like it? So it doesn't have to do with sexuality or anything about like sexy ladies or whatever. So there's no shame there. But just something that's just kind of like if somebody, I know somebody who like really likes Rob Liefeld, but they understand what's wrong.
Yeah.
But they're like, no, as long as I understand it, it's okay. And that is true. As long as you know Thing is bad, you can still like Thing. You just need to understand why bad.
Read it ironically.
Yeah.
Not even ironically. Well, you could still just like it for the sake of it. But as long as you can just acknowledge, like, oh, okay, yeah, his art's not finished. It's not great. This is not by any good standards great. But I still like it because it's my nostalgia or it's what I grew up with. Do you have anything like that?
I feel like I should, but I just can't quite pin anything. I mean,
you failed
like,
the test, Nicole!
I really liked the Nancy and Hell series, and it was like the derivative stalker, slasher girl who always dies first because she's promiscuous.
Yeah.
And I can't say that there's anything like particularly great or unique about it, or that anybody should really ever care about the series, but it just was super enjoyable to me because it was just like silly and ridiculous. It was kind of like watching a B movie.
I think that's, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that would be it. And I just, I can't say that I'd tell everybody to go read it, because then maybe they would be like, never recommend anything to me again. But like, but I don't know. It was just fun. So I guess that could be maybe the closest thing to a guilty pleasure, because I just don't feel like it's something that has mass appeal. You know, like a Garth Ennis, like, you know, God loses his mind and he's like doing dirty things in the sky because he can't deal with it. And people are like, I don't want to read about that. And I'm like, it's great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I know you guys are like the least judgmental comic store here.
Oh, okay. The store, not me as an individual. Okay.
But when somebody comes up, somebody you don't know, and they buy a comic that you just know this is super bad, do you kind of silently judge them? Are you like, well, or
that
do you
face that face? Do you need to use the restroom?
There's some things that people buy that I know why they're buying it, and it's not for the quality of the material.
Okay.
And
is it for the artwork?
You could say that.
Yes.
There are things depicted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
I try to just gloss over it as quickly as I can so that I don't form judgment.
I think for me, like, even if I would have a personal judgment on it, I still feel like we should have a vast variety of things.
Yeah.
It's not my flavor. I could care less if it disappeared tomorrow, but you know what? That's for somebody out there. So great.
I think
what do you think?
It's difficult for me to digest. It's like, I could ring it up and be like, oh, you're getting things. But when somebody, like, I ring a thing up and then they're just like, isn't that the best thing ever? And I'm like, I've not read it. Or not my cup of tea. that's where I gotta go over it really quick and be like, yeah, that's fine. Moving on. Cool. So yeah.
Alrighty. All right, Guilty Pleasure Comics. Hey, let's move on. And the next quick topic up for grabs today is what minor character do you want to see get his, her, their, its own title?
Lockjaw.
Lockjaw.
Yeah.
The Inhumans. Now the time is ripe because he's actually appeared on the television for the first time ever.
Yay.
But I got into a debate today on Facebook, of all things.
not again.
Whether Lockjaw is a dog or an Inhuman.
That was thanks to me.
Yes. Yeah, it was. And our one of our dear listeners pointed out that Peter David made Lockjaw back to a dog, and the, you know, but there was a time where it was like, no, this is just how the Terrigen Mist changed him. He looks like a dog, but he's not really a dog.
I'm okay with either. I think I prefer dog. It's so 50-50 now, because everybody can quote a version of either being the accurate version. I don't care.
Yeah,
as long as he, because even if he's a human, he thinks he's a dog now.
Mm-hmm.
So for all intents and purposes, he dog.
Yeah. Kamala Khan thinks that he's a dog, so I'm going to go with Kamala.
All right. Yeah. All right. He was Ben Grimm's dog, and he fetched sewer manholes as frisbees. He's a dog.
Yeah.
A good dog.
Does he like scratches and pets?
Yes.
Yeah. Then he's a dog.
And hugs.
And he eats out of a bowl. We know that.
I eat out of a bowl. Does that make me a puppy?
You know,
the bowl is generally not on the floor, though, when you get out of it.
Let's keep those special things at home, shall we?
All right. Any others? Weird. I was just trying to be cute. Oh, well.
And I went to the weird place. Fail. I apologize.
Any others? Any other minor characters?
For me,
we want to see
I would like
title?
To see Quentin Quire, Kid Omega. It was created by Grant Morrison, Frank Quietly, in their run of X-Men. He is like this, you know, god-powered telekinetic, and he is he's an anarchist. He's absolutely obnoxious and suffers from Trump-level hubris.
Didn't he kind of get his own, like, front and center with the Wolverine and X-Men, like, relaunch or whatever?
Exactly.
Yeah.
He was a cool character.
Which is why I was actually, because I reread those a couple months ago.
Oh, gotcha.
Or actually, I read those. I never read those. I bought them off a mutual friend of mine in Ben's, and I've sat on them for a year, and I finally read them. I'm like, you know, I'd like, because supposedly he will be a future avatar of the Phoenix Force, too.
You should catch up to the Mighty Thor stuff, because he's front and center there. Because
I'm reading those.
You're there.
Cool. Yeah, I just he has like an ironic aspect about him, but excuse me, such intense hubris that he's just a jackass. And I would like to see a story about a jackass who, you know, does or does not get his comeuppance. That's the experiment of the story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. So I would like to see that. The other one is a similar type of situation is Penance, formerly Speedball. They did do a Penance miniseries that Paul Gulacy drew. And I know that he's come Speedball again, and actually Speedball is now going to be in the
New Warriors?
The New Warriors TV series. But I was fascinated by that Penance series because when he was Speedball, he accidentally killed 612 people. And due to his, what? Hubris. As a result, he lost his powers from his guilt, but he built this costume that has...
It was an Iron Maiden, pretty much.
It was an Iron Maiden costume, and there were 612 spikes in it. And
why are you laughing? Iron Maiden start playing in your head?
Totally BDSM costume.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of BDSM in comics, in comics that are supposedly directed at young people, going all the way back to Wonder Woman. what you smirking, Chris? Share the smirk.
Somebody did a short story because his girlfriend was Squirrel Girl.
Yeah.
And she went and met him as Penance, and she was just like, "Whoa, you're a little too emo right now." And then he was just like, "I also got a suit for my cat because Speedball had a cat, and the cat had like a little torture suit." Yeah. That's all I could think of.
I don't know why I thought the Gulacy series was fascinating, because when you start talking it out, it's really just a really bad idea. But there were just things that I wanted to see explored some more, and it's not going to happen because he's gone back to being Speedball. But, you know.
All right.
And I've also wanted to see at least a miniseries devoted to supporting characters. Like, I wanted to see a graphic novel about Rick Jones and, you know, a bio novel about him. And Wong!
I would like to see
a great story. You don't want to see Rick Jones?
He's everywhere all the time.
No. Once upon a time. But Wong, you know, Dr. Strange's tried and true.
Wong could be good.
I'm down for some Wong.
Wong could be real good. You know? Let's get Wong on.
Wong has seen a lot.
Wong's seen some stuff.
Yeah.
And I was really digging the Jason Aaron, Chris Bacalo, Doctor Strange series, and they've switched up the team, so it's probably going to go in an entirely different direction now. But I loved how Wong was depicted in that series.
What if Wong and Jarvis teamed up for a series?
Yeah, the manservants. That would be fun.
The one I would love to see would be a ongoing series for Bat-Cow, Titus, and the cat Pennyworth.
Could we just have like Damien's? Yeah, like pets, just because there's tons of them. They could go on tons of adventures.
Yep,
super pets. That needs to happen. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And Crypto joins them.
Absolutely. So everybody.
Bat family.
Everybody. But like in the Super Son sort of style almost. You know, something like that would be great.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
And Nicole, do you have any minor characters you want to see get major
stories?
Oh,
I want that now.
You want that one?
Just do that. That and Wong, and I'm good.
Yeah.
All right. And finally today, Sean Murphy is going to come out with Batman White Knight, where he makes Batman the bad guy and the Joker the good guy. And so I thought, what other comic is made more interesting when the hero and the villain switch alignments?
You talked about that with Doom.
Yeah, that with Doom, and we've talked about Incorruptible.
Yeah,
And that one wasn't that interesting for me. Actually,
Irredeemable and Incorruptible.
Yeah,
I got bored with it.
I got bored with him. Venom does that like every 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Venom becomes the lethal protector. Now he's the villain again. Now he's good again.
But big gun characters, you know, because, you know, Deathstroke the Terminator, he's waffled back and forth whether he's a good guy or he's a bad guy, or just, you know, Machiavellian, you know.
Millar did Nemesis, which was what if Batman was just straight up evil. So unfortunately he's already done this, except it was so horrible.
But Nemesis is interesting. And I think Nemesis was one of those final nails in the coffin for you with Millar, because it is so gratuitously violent.
It is.
But what you find out at the end of this, and is this superhero doing all the just perverse opportunities to do evil and cruel things. But then you find out at the end that this is just a guy who hired an organization to give him this opportunity. And it's the organization that is equally complicit because they're going to give this opportunity to another person in another couple of days. That was what I thought was particularly evil about the story. And it made me really kind of appreciate it because this is the extreme of hedonism. And that's what I felt was being successfully examined there. But I know Chris just hated it. So.
It was gratuitous. And this is coming from somebody who liked the first Cross volume. I'm having trouble. So Deathstroke would fall into that category too, of somebody that flips and they've done stories where he's good and then he goes back to evil, and there's been some interesting turns there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the question though isn't which ones have, but which ones would be the more interesting?
Would be the more interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, would be the more interesting.
Evil Hulk.
Evil
just
Hulk.
Unapologetic Evil Hulk. Yeah. Which we kind of got with Planet Hulk. But a Hulk that has a mind and is out for vengeance, and we got that with Planet Hulk, and I enjoyed that story. And I think we may be seeing more of that down the road.
I kind of would actually like to see a truly evil Peter Parker, and not like a superior Spider-Man, Dr. Octopus, somebody replaces him. But what if Peter Parker was just a terrible little douche?
Born evil? Raised evil?
Yeah,
evil thrust upon him.
What if Uncle Ben never died and he just got spoiled and worse from then on out?
Yeah. But he still became Spider-Man?
Still became Spider-Man.
Okay.
But
there's a what if about that, with what if Uncle Ben did not die?
Yeah.
Because remember, that turning point is that Peter is, you know, he's trying to make money. He's trying to be the wrestler, and it is the robber that... they did it a little bit differently in the movie, where he gets does he get screwed out of the money in the original story by the promoter as well?
I don't think so.
It seems to me in the comic book he's actually coming home with the money, and then he gets home and he's finally going to be able to help out Uncle Ben and Aunt May, and he finds out that the robber that he let go. No, actually, the promoter was screwing him out of the money, because that's why he let the bank robber or the robber go. Mm-hmm. But in the what if story, that doesn't happen, and he just goes on to become a really self-indulgent performer.
I think I'd also like to see a reality or a set of stories where what if Lex Luthor was always good. And not just like they've done something like that. There's an alternate world where there's an evil Superman and a good Alexander Luthor.
Right.
But I like it just like, what if Superman was good and Luthor was good? Like, how far do they go together?
Hmm.
Like, how much do they actually improve the world as a team?
Yeah.
They did kind of play with the idea in Injustice, where Superman's gone crazy, but Luthor joins him, but Luthor's actually kind of on the side, like helping the good guys. So it's like you almost have the idea there, but not quite. But like a truly benevolent Lex Luthor that doesn't require you to visit another reality. You know, so that'd be fun, maybe.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, just a little fun little thought experiment. Speaking of Aunt May, I know that we've had this discussion about the how Aunt May seems to be getting younger and younger in the movie series. Yeah. And I read an interesting fact that Marissa Tomei, who plays Aunt May in the new Spider-Man movies, is older now than Rue McClanahan was when she started filming The Golden Girls back in the 80s. Oh. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. Let's move on to Book Report, everybody. Wow. And Nicole, let's start with you.
Okay, so I read Jessica Abel's Trish Trash, Roller Girl of Mars. I think it's the first of three volumes, because there's a 1, 2, 3, but that could be wrong. So this first volume sets the scene. You meet Patricia, also known as Trish, and she is really into roller derby. That happens on Mars, where they don't have skates, but like rocket shoes or something like that instead. And it's a future where people are living on Mars. There's water farmers. That's a thing.
It's Mars.
Yeah, there's like indentured servitude and a lot of like political sociological things that are occurring in this area that you kind of get snippets of through news reports and stuff. And Trisha, her parents are... away, not sure if they're coming back, so she's staying with her aunt and uncle, and she has to work the water farm and stuff like that. But she's also 7.5, because Mars is twice as long days or years or whatever like that, so she's like 14 and a half technically, but they're cute like that. And she, mm-hmm. yeah. And like, you know, they don't have just November, December. It's November, Novembus, December, Decembus, because they have to be twice as long. Anyway, just a little tidbit there. But she really loves the roller derby thing, so she tries to get in with it. She's a little too young. She has a friend that is already on like a starter team, and so she gets in. She's very tech savvy, so while she can't really be on the team, she becomes a skate girl, which means like she can help you know, fix all the gear and stuff like that. I guess it would be something equivalent to like the bat girl or ball. What is the thing in baseball where they have like the little kids, like
the ball boy?
Yeah, something like that. I would think it would be like kind of the equivalent. And there's also this interesting little subplot that there's these strange insectoid creatures that everybody is kind of scared of, but you never really like see anything. But about close to the end, you kind of get a little bit more into that, which to me was the most intriguing part. They leave you on this really cool cliffhanger that I can't say is necessarily like a fresh take in the sci-fi genre, but I like her art style. And so the depiction of the world and some of the interesting little mixes that she has in there keeps it a little fresh for me. So like I said, this is the first volume. The second volume is scheduled to come out August 9th. So if you wanted to get into the series, it'd be good because you get that nice little cliffhanger. And then in August, you can read more about it. It was really interesting. I really like the art style is really pretty. I think she's a Hispanic protagonist, so it's not just like another white person in comics too, if that's something that you're interested in with the representation. And especially if you like roller derby stuff, there are a few different comics out. There's the Roller Girl I've talked about, Slam, and now Trish Trash. So you could just keep your roller derby comics going with this comic and get a little interesting sci-fi kick as well.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Trish Trash. Thanks, Nicole. Mm-hmm. Chris Cassell, what do you got for us?
So Nicole did a review for Dark Days The Forge, which is the part of the DC event that's coming up. And they're doing a weird series of like formats here. So there's a one shot called Dark Days Forge. Now there's a one shot called Dark Days The Casting. It's number two. It's straight up an exact continuation. It's seconds after the one that Nicole reviewed. And then they're going to launch a series called Dark Knights Metal. And amongst that, there's going to be a bunch of one shots for different characters and then crossovers. So I'm not happy with the format, but I did enjoy the story. When Nicole did her review, she mentioned a lot of this stuff is definitely very referential. Mm-hmm. It's written for fans of DC for like the last 15 to 20 years. And people who know what some of the old language is before the new 52. So this continues with the Hawkman backstory and the main story of Batman searching out this mystery that's like haunting him. And it has a lot to do with the different metals of the DC universe. Specifically the Nth metal, which is the Hawkman's can fly because of that, and all his technology comes from it. But they reveal like the Eighth metal, which is created by the gods, and Wonder Woman gives Batman a nifty flaming sword. And then Batman's had the Joker locked up in the one of the Jokers, because a year ago they hinted there's more than one Joker, locked up in the Batcave and figuring out stuff for him and stuff like that. But in the flashbacks, they bring back the Challengers of the Unknown and the Blackhawks.
Wow.
And they start talking about the ancient enemies of bats were always birds. So we're definitely talking about Hawkman here. So there's some play between the symbolism of the bats and the birds and all that. But then it just drops some random characters that if you don't know anything about like the most obscure Jack Kirby stuff, you're like, what? Happily, I do know. Dublex, the little horn guy.
Oh, wow.
From Cadmus.
The Cadmus Project?
Yep. And they mention the name. You know, they're like, Dublex, is Cadmus here? It's like, if you don't know this stuff, you're like, blurb, 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 blub, blub, blub. But otherwise,
you're like me, that's probably a thing.
Yeah. But if you're Cole or me, we're like, Dublex. You know,
Legion?
Not yet.
Oh.
But Give it time. Give it time. But then there's some big stuff about Ra's al Ghul and Talia al Ghul and da 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 da. So it's more of like random reference. Look at this thing. Random reference. Look at this thing. And I kind of love that. But I can understand why it's definitely not great. But the larger mystery is that Batman has seen the death of multiple Batmans in weird dreams and stuff. And he's building a device to figure what this is. And so they're going to reveal that, like, there's another dark multiverse. So I'm a fan of that. What I'm not a fan of is, so there's multiple art styles in here, and most of them are pretty solid, but John Romita Jr., man,
yeah.
he was rushed. He must have been rushed. Look at this page, Cole, and just look at Batman's thighs. Look, Nicole.
Yeah, I hear you.
Look at those thighs.
See, I'm weird. I have always actually liked John Romita Jr. Yeah, but I do.
But this
I
is like the simplest
you.
Page, and his faces are weird.
You've shown me some older material from him, and it looks good. Now his stuff is like sloppy. His anatomy is like stick figures filled out sometimes, you know, with circle heads.
His
and
Daredevil, X-Men. I liked those.
Yeah, when he did Thor for Marvel Heroes Reborn, Return, that was great. Yeah. I was just saying this book he was rushed in. Okay. I swear to you, dear listener, the Batman's thighs are like spaghetti thin, and he's mounting like this thing
knobby.
Really weird.
He's
straddling.
He's like
weird.
Doing a showgirl move.
Yeah.
Or
so maybe buy it just
weird.
For that.
It's Magic Mike, but you know, Batman.
So I enjoyed it. I like this kind of mystery play. I like things that piece together ancient artifacts for the DC universe. So right now it's my jam. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with it. Multiversal stuff's my jam. So this is totally my peanut butter, my jam, and my bread right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a whole sandwich.
That's a whole sandwich. Yeah, it's pretty tasty for me. I'm just not a fan of how they are formatting it as far as the release dates, because I've had a couple customers today just be like, so I get this. And then I get this. Did I miss a thing?
Yeah.
So there's just a little too much, like, question marks at the end of every sentence.
Too much to figure out. Yeah. And there's not even that much out. What I do appreciate is there is a lot of building in these two one-shots. So even if you're not getting the referential material, you know they're up to something, and it's pretty cool. I like when you see that. I can tell that there's some excitement going into the series. So I do like that, you know, even though it's very much not new reader friendly. I think that this is something that old fans of DC have been probably wanting for a while, or maybe not even knowing that they want it.
Right.
It's kind of a Batman, the justice that they deserve, but not know that they need to deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so I think it's pretty cool. I might read it at some point. I just am kind of a little apprehensive because I know I'm probably not going to understand most of it.
I'm probably going to ask a really dangerous and unwise question. But a couple of weeks ago, you know, I reviewed, or last week rather, I reviewed the Elseworlds Golden Age, and I was reminded of all of the quagmire that is the story of Hawkman.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in the post-New 52 rebirth, is he still a Thanagarian police officer, or is he still an incarnation of an ancient Egyptian warrior, or is he both? Or is what are they doing with that now? And should I dare ask, or is that a mistake?
Let me just answer your sadness with a quick bit of sadness so we move on. There was just previous to this a whole series called The Death of Hawkman, and he totally died at the end of this. This, what we're reading, is a letter that Hawkman left, but at the end of it, Hawkman says, I'm going to go off into the dark beyond. See ya. And now I'm like, how could you do that if you did? But how could you have died if you've been trapped in the dark beyond? Because they just announced there's going to be a series called Batman Found, or Hawkman Found. I'm like, so you're going to find him in the dark beyond.
Yes.
But you're dead. So we're just going to say, who knows?
And Wonder Girl or Donna Troy are, they're two characters that they just continually worsen with each, you know, you can reboot Superman with your universe, and you can reboot, but there are these other characters that it is a royal mess, and it actually gives me intestinal cramps.
Geoff Johns fixed Hawkman, and then the New 52 booted that into pain.
Right.
So we're just gonna be like,
I'm sorry, I asked. Yeah. It's just gonna make me sad,
yeah,
and convince me that the reboots are just, you know, a curse upon us all.
Yes.
All right. Dark Days, the casting. Thank you, Chris. And finally, Mr. Cole Hornaday, what do you got for us?
Well, I got a tome. I got an epic tome here. I have, the last couple of weeks, have been trying to go back and give Jonathan Hickman a better shake. I mean, I really enjoy Black Monday Murders. I really enjoy East of West. But I was vocal years gone by about my lack of appreciation for what he did with Fantastic Four. But he's also become the great Marvel, what do I want to say, engineer.
Architect.
Architect of the universe. And also, I'm going back and rereading a lot of the Infinity stuff in anticipation of the movie. Is it going to be Infinity Gauntlet? Is that the next one?
That's what they're aiming toward. Okay, they're calling it Infinity War.
And all of that stuff is escalating in value, so I'm going to back and reread it and deciding whether I want to keep it or, you know, sell it to the kids who are just going all ape hockey about the Infinity Gauntlet stuff. Anyway, my point being is that I just read the hardbound edition of Infinity, which is, it is an epic, man. It covers, it includes Infinity number 1 to 6, New Avengers 7 to 2, Avengers 14 to 23, and Infinity Against the Tide 1 and 2. It's probably one of the most epic crossovers I'm glad I did not read, but I'm glad I read in one collection.
Mm-hmm.
Because the artwork is really fun. Hickman, Chris and I were talking before we sat down to record, and this may be one of those that he suffered from a lot of necessary editorial influence, because there are two big epic plots happening that really don't meet very well. I mean, mm-hmm. one is the Avengers fighting in a big space battle, and lots of Avengers gang. There's like, you know, a cast of like 3-4 dozen characters in this. And they are fighting The builders, right? Yeah, the builders of the universe, who are like 65 million year old beings who I'm not quite clear, but want to decide to undo what they did.
Yeah, never got that.
Meanwhile, Thanos, who's actually just, you know, the super hip character now because Infinity War, is on his way to Earth with his cadre of bad guys in tow to find. At first, I thought he was after one of the Infinity Gems, and I think he kind of is, but he's also after his illegitimate son, Thane, mm-hmm. who is being raised by a secret enclave of the Inhumans. It's really gorgeous. The artwork is not always consistent, but it is.
Is it mostly Ribic in that?
No, it's a lot of. Ribic is not even involved in this.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Jim Chung. Jerome Opeña, Dustin Weaver, really love. Yeah, Mike Deodato, Stefano Caselli, and Lionel Francis Yu.
Mm.
But Dustin Weaver's artwork is always—I've always just loved it. But I'm reading this, going, "Wow, this—you know—we just keep getting bigger and bigger in how we tell these stories, because really, this is just the Avengers." Kree-Skrull War on a bigger scope.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at all these big image, and the imagery in it is really superb. The plot is really, like I said, a little bit weak, and the multiple plots don't really dovetail that well together. It's just like, this battle's over now, so we're going to go fight here, and this battle at Wakanda's over, so we're going to go fight here. Oh, and that's the other thing, is that helped with a little bit of a background story of, yeah. Weep for Me, Wakanda.
They're reprinting some of that stuff in the Ta-Nehisi stuff.
And I appreciated that, because it was it gave me a little bit more background on the Namor T'Challa conflict, which I appreciated a lot.
Yeah.
But you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, gone are the days where you, like, you know, you got an episode of Star Trek where you got, you know, two spaceships going pew 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 at each other, because now you've got dozens that fill the sky in these stories, and you know, and but it's fun. I just was kind of wondering, and maybe this is just the old man that I am, and I'm kind of like, where do we go from all this epic stuff?
Yeah,
are we ever going to go back to the scope of, like, you know, the Enterprise and the Reliant going pew 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 at each other?
Well, here's an interesting question. Yeah. Once Thanos finally arrives,
right,
what does the Marvel Universe movies gear toward after that?
I'm wondering if it's Secret Wars,
right?
But it's going to be the same thing, because Secret Wars was the the urtext for these crossovers, and it wasn't the best, and they've done better since. But, you know, it's still a really popular, I know I should ask you rather than tell you, is it not a very popular reprint collection? Is not Secret Wars still pretty?
Not for us.
No, okay.
Yeah, it's definitely important. Yeah, it's definitely important, but it's not as popular as a bunch of other Marvel events.
Okay,
as sales wise.
All right.
Yeah, I just don't know. I get that feeling of just like everything's always building into this big thing. What happens when big thing happens? Yeah. Yeah. Does Disney be like, we're done? You know, but it's like you're not going
to
say that.
That's a good thing for us to speculate for the future. Is like, where's the MCU going to go when we do the
musicals?
Do you think they could do something like Annihilation, or do you think they've already? I mean, because they introduced Nova Corps, and
and I would love that, but at the same time, again, it's like, hey, we already got a big purple guy.
Yeah,
I want something more homebound then, or something more character orientated than the big threats coming.
So I've never read Annihilation. Is it anything like this?
Way better.
Way better.
Okay. Way better.
Because lots of people have recommended it to me, and honestly, I've never
read it. It's like mostly out of print.
Well, but you can get the trades, right? I could probably get them at the library.
Maybe the library, but I think they're out of print.
This is, for me, like a 5 or 6 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Annihilation's a 11 out of 10.
And this is a big freaking book. This is...
And that's not even everything in the Hickman run.
No, this is like a $75 hardbound when it came out in 2015. So, you know, I enjoyed it, but... It was a labor to get through it, you guys. Last night, I'm like 3/4 of the way through going, I need to go to bed in 2 hours. Am I going to be able to finish reading this thing before?
Yeah, that was my question. That's like 200, 250 pages there. How long did it take you to read that?
It took me like a weekend and an evening.
I bet you that's close to the 400 or 500 pages almost.
Yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah, because they're
it's
like thin,
comic book,
glossy.
And it's not like there's a lot of verbiage on all the pages. You know, it was an effort, you know, because I'm also trying to keep track of everybody, you know.
Of course.
And there's a lot of, there's so many moving parts.
It is a Hickman story.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's where it fails. It's like we've got the Builder's story and then the Thanos story and the conflict between, and the Illuminati stuff.
Yeah, and all the interpersonal conflicts.
Right, yeah. And so there are moments that I appreciate, as I mentioned earlier, and the artwork is all solid and really lovely, but yeah, it does not dovetail together well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Infinity. The giant version of it. Cool. Thank you, Cole. Mm-hmm. Well, that is Book Report, and that is our show. And coming up is quiz time. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com and by Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicextension.com. Find us online at perfectboundpodcast.com, where you can subscribe to us via iTunes or however you get your podcast. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. Tell us what you think of the show, and or send us quiz time questions, which is, what time is it? It's quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. And this week, the questions come to us from me.
Yay!
Is it my blood sugar crashing, or is Ben talking really, really super fast?
I think we're in slow motion. Yeah. I think that's the difference.
It's like, also super normal. Late, and I want to get out of here. I have been making my way through the backlog of HBO shows. I've been meaning to watch The Wire and Boardwalk Empire, where the cops in both shows serve as both protagonists and antagonists. Below are questions about some of the men and women in blue you'll find between the pages of your funny books. Hat tip to denofgeek.com for this list. Number one, created by Chester Gould as a reaction to the rampant corruption and urban decay of Depression-era America, this cop that started it all was a modern-day paladin with a square jaw, broken nose, and beady eyes, tasked with protecting the purity of society. Who is it?
Dick Tracy.
Number two, not very well known, but given the chance, Liza Warner could have gone down in history as one of comics' toughest and bravest cops, making her first appearance in 1975 in DC's first issue special number 4, Officer Warner proved herself to be a very capable and tough protagonist in a very dark world. Created by Robert Kaniger and John Rosenberger, Liza Warner was also known by what nickname?
It's not Miss Tree.
No, I'll give it to you. It's Lady Cop.
Lady Cop.
Yeah.
Number three, armed with just his service revolver, a cop's instinct, and a stout heart, this cop has been fighting the good fight in Gotham City for as long as there's been a Batman. Say together.
Commissioner Gordon.
James Gordon.
Number four,
we didn't do a good job of saying it together, did we? No.
Once a small-town cop who barely had to draw his gun, this law enforcer now finds himself the capable leader of a band of survivors in a world that has gone zombie mad. Say together.
Rick Grimes
and Walking Dead.
Number five. One of Spider-Man's greatest allies against crime, this cop never shied away from crimes involving super criminals and was always the first into the fray, whether the perp was wielding a death ray or a switchblade. Her murder at the hands of the Sin Eater was one of the most tragic events in Marvel history, as Spider-Man not only lost a friend and confidant, but the world lost a believer and defender of truth and justice forever.
DeWolf?
Yes, it is Gene DeWolf.
Gene DeWolf.
All right. Well, thank you, friends. That is quiz time. That is our show. And thank you for listening. And we will see you next week.
Woo-woo.